Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast.
Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Mom and I have kind of stolen the microphones for these next couple of episodes. We've got another interview coming. But last week we got to hear from Mom, and Mom, we got to hear your story on suffering and what it was like to lose your hearing, and just to learn to hear God in the midst of that, and about teaching our kids the importance of a theology of suffering. And, you know, that got us talking about grieving. What does it look like to grieve and to grieve honestly?
You said something that surprised me, that now we've been talking over lunch and over some time together talking about, that you felt prepared in a sense, as much as anybody ever can be, to suffer. So you didn't reject God, like was my initial response, but you felt very ill-prepared to grieve honestly, to lament, as the Bible calls it, to recognize what you were feeling, to feel it, to sit with God in your grieving.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting, and I want us to talk a little bit more about it, because though I prepared you for suffering, I didn't prepare you for grieving, which I do want to talk to the moms right now who put too much responsibility on their own shoulders and remind you that you are not going to do this parenting journey perfectly.
No.
You are not equipped to equip your children with certain things. We're all in the process of learning. There are things I didn't know back in the 1980s when I was raising Elizabeth, in the 90s and the early 2000s. There were things I didn't know a year ago. That if you could only, you know, I did at one point just kind of burst out and everybody laughed, but I meant it perfectly seriously, say, I really wasn't ready to be a mother, to have children till my 50s. It's true.
Oh, man.
Isn't it true? Yes. We have our children in our 20s and our 30s, and there's just so much we don't know yet.
Yes.
So for those of you moms who are just trying to say, okay, I'm going to do a beautiful job of teaching my children the theology of suffering, and now I'm also going to teach them all the psychological and spiritual aspects of grieving, just lighten up just a little bit.
Yep.
And just listen to this conversation, because you as a parent are not doing this alone. You have the Holy Spirit guiding you. There will be gaps in your parenting, gaps in the wisdom and life experience you have, gaps in the way you say things. And the Holy Spirit is more than capable of stepping in and teaching your children as they're coming close to Him. So
that's so good, Mom. And I as being one who, you know, like I said, I felt like I wasn't prepared for grieving. I don't think that that's because you didn't teach me. I don't look at that and say, man, I wish Mom and Dad had taught me how to grieve. I think it's so multi-layered, because I think as a culture, we don't grieve. As a church, we don't grieve. No. We grieve for like a second.
Yes.
But long-term grief or any sort of...
Very little tolerance for people grieving long-term.
Or tolerance for ourselves.
Yes.
You know, we quickly skip to other emotions. And so you know, I think we have to remember that with our kids is we are a voice and a influence, the primary yes. voice and influence, mm-hmm. but we're not the only voice and influence. Aren't. And that's okay. That's, yeah. I mean, God designed us to all live in community and we're not mm-hmm. trying to shelter our kids mm-hmm. from the world, but there's going to be messages they hear that we didn't give them or messages mm-hmm. we gave them that they're not going to hear
yes.
until they live it themselves. And mm-hmm. I think that really should take some
that's
pressure
really important.
Off yes. of us.
So yeah. first of all, Elizabeth, can you walk us through just a little bit for those who haven't heard all of Birdie's story and the story, your story in the process of suffering? What it is you had to grieve in the first place.
Yeah. Man, you're going to make me tear up already. you know, we shared our daughter Birdie's story. I don't remember what episode it was, so we'll link it in the show notes. But we shared her whole story of what happened with her. But I would say there had been small things, I would say small sufferings in my life that mm-hmm. that were more short-term grief or maybe some things that I hadn't even fully grieved. Our son started losing his hearing when he was mm-hmm. five, mm-hmm. Similar to mom's story, but started mm-hmm. a lot younger. But his is only in one ear, so he has one normally functioning ear. And so that was sad for it because it was really progressive at first, and then it's been stable for a long time now.
Sad the first time you had to fit him for hearing aids, and he felt self-conscious and different.
So I think there was definitely grieving that happened mm-hmm. there, but didn't necessarily feel like devastating grief. Mm-hmm. And I have hearing loss. I wear hearing mm-hmm. aids. And I think I've known that for a long time. And I'm beginning to grieve it now. I'm so used to this. Mm-hmm. But actually, it was the other day I was at Costco. And, you know, everyone's wearing masks right now. Mm-hmm. And there was plexiglass between me and the person ringing up my groceries. And he was wearing a mask.
Disastrous for anybody who's hard of hearing.
Yeah. And I couldn't hear a word he said. Yeah. And I realized, oh my gosh, I read lips like my mom.
Yeah.
I have to read lips now. Like, yes, I didn't realize I read lips. Yeah. Anyway, moment of grief there. But the I would say kind of shocking, deeper grief came when our daughter Birdie was diagnosed with a really, really rare form of epilepsy called infantile spasms. And her whole story is in that episode, but it was a really tragic diagnosis mm-hmm. and a mm-hmm. really challenging 6 months of treatment with mm-hmm. copious unknowns. I mean, mm-hmm. they basically said she will either be in a wheelchair with a feeding tube and never talk to you mm-hmm. if she even survives the treatment. Mm-hmm. Or that's worst case scenario. Best case scenario is she will have learning disabilities and probably behavioral problems and some form of epilepsy her whole life, but she'll be higher functioning and mm-hmm. you'll be able to work through those things. Mm-hmm. Or she could be anywhere on the spectrum in between mm-hmm. and we won't know until she's much older. Mm-hmm. And I just remember feeling like you said, Mom, not surprised by suffering, mm-hmm. not mad at God, not questioning God. Mm-hmm. But the unknowns of what all of it was going to look like mm-hmm. almost crushed me. I mean, it just felt like I was grasping for every form of control. And mm-hmm. so for me, it looked like keeping things organized and clean mm-hmm. and being
purging your house.
Yes.
I've never seen anybody be able to go through and find
and get rid of
excess
stuff
and get rid of it like you. Yes.
My poor children. They would like look in the garbage can and say, Mom, what did you throw away? I had to stop doing that after a while because I was scarring them greatly. But, you know, I think it began of that of just like, man, what was so hard for me was I'm such a like practical, tell me exactly what's going to happen, even mm-hmm. if it's the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. And then I can make a plan and I can rally and I can embrace it. But when you are in the thick of, we have no idea what's going to happen and it could be horrifically awful. Mm-hmm. And I just found myself so unsure. I felt so ungrounded. Like I'd felt like, I don't even know what to feel because I don't know what I'm grieving.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so at first I felt like, you know, we were in this really intense time of this treatment with her, which was very similar to chemotherapy. She had no immune system and it was just really intense on her body. And we had to be quarantined in our house for 6 months.
Except I remember that every day for months, you had to take her to the hospital to
check her blood pressure. Yeah. So for 3 months, every day for 3 months, because the medication she was on is really hard on your heart. And so her blood pressure skyrocketed. So she was on blood pressure medication. But because she was an infant, the at-home machines weren't accurate. So we had to take her to the pediatric ICU every day. Yeah. And I just remember, in the thick of that, just feeling like I know I'm not fully grieving right now. I was aware of it, which I'm thankful.
You said that to me several times. Yeah, like you were putting it off.
Yeah, because of two things. I felt like I had to now be a caregiver, and I had to, I wasn't just her mom, I was her caregiver and the manager of her case. You know, she had so many different doctors and communicating with all of them was like a full-time job. And so I had that. And then I also, I didn't know what I was grieving. I didn't know if I was grieving the loss of my daughter.
Right.
Or, you know, I just, there was no way to know. And only time would really tell. But slowly over time, I began to, I think, really let myself feel the emotions and feel all the negative emotions.
Like what?
Like intense disappointment.
Yes. Okay.
And I feel like this is still messy. I feel like this has still been a process. So my thoughts and feelings towards this might change a year from now, and I might have a lot more to say. But I, when I was pregnant with her, I had kind of this abnormal amount of fear when I was pregnant with her. And I would pray about it and I'd talk to Brooke about it all the time. I journaled about it. I literally still have the journals at home. Of this sense of like this feeling of something's going to go wrong and something's going to go wrong at birth. And I don't know, I think the more kids you've had, the more you realize what can go wrong. Yeah. I'd had friends who'd lost babies on the last push or, you know, I was just much more aware. And I kind of attributed it to that of like, I think I'm just more aware. I'm not normally an anxious, fearful person at all. And I remember after she was born, feeling this intense relief of just, everything's okay. She's okay. And I actually found the other day, and as much as I wanted to throw it away, I decided to keep it because I'll be glad I have it someday, a journal entry from 3 days after she was born.
Okay.
And it's 2 pages of just rejoicing and thanking God that she was okay.
Yeah. Because you'd had sort of a dread that she wouldn't be.
And I thought, okay, she's born. She's perfectly healthy. Like, that was all just fear. God protected her. She's okay. And so I felt like, so she was 6 months when she first got diagnosed and had been seemingly healthy up until that point.
Progressing normally, developmentally.
Looking back, she had some signs, but none that anybody would have caught. The doctors didn't even catch them. And so I felt like when she got sick, that was just ripped from me. It just felt like a shock. It felt like that made it all that much harder. I kept feeling like I didn't have time to prepare. Like if I found out she was sick when I was pregnant, I would have been able to prepare. She would have been born and I would have known she was sick.
Yeah.
And I would have, and I, in my mind, I think I idealized if I'd known before, I would have instantly accepted it.
Okay.
And I think looking back, I think I had thought if I had known before, if I had known when I was pregnant, I would have processed so that I wouldn't grieve it when she was born.
Okay.
Which is just false. Like, it's like not true.
Because you want to avoid, all of us want to avoid grief at all costs because it's horrible.
Yes.
Messy and just probably the deepest emotion we can feel.
Yeah. And it distracts you from everything else that's happening around
you. It just takes over.
Yeah. And I am, you know, every woman is different. I love the first year of a baby's life. Yeah, that's like blissful time to me. Toddlers are a whole nother story. Don't feel that exact same way about that stage, although they're really cute. So I felt too like, man, this her your first year of life, her being a baby was robbed from me, you know?
Yeah.
And I just had to really just sit with that. And I think what I learned in there, and I would say grief is not linear in any way.
Yeah.
But I've definitely found that there have been phases to grieving the life that we wanted for Birdie or the life mm-hmm. that we thought she was going to have. Mm-hmm. And I think at first, and why it brings tears to me now, is because it felt so crushing.
Yeah.
It felt like this like weight and boulder that I couldn't get out from under. Mm-hmm. And even in that, I felt God's presence so there. I mean, I describe it as like it felt thick. It was like palpable. Mm-hmm. And I shared in her story when we shared it, when we were in the emergency room or the urgent care right before we got sent to the hospital, and the doctor had awkwardly left the room, and I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what. And I felt like, I mean, similar to you, Mom, like I felt like God like audibly spoke and just said, I'm with you. I'm mm-hmm. with you. I'm with you. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. And this like deep sense in my spirit that this is bad, but God has mm-hmm. just made a promise to me that he's with me mm-hmm. in all of it. Mm-hmm. And that was so true. Even in the mm-hmm. crushing grief, I remember feeling like God was not absent from me mm-hmm. in that.
Which brings me to just to speak so loud to me out of Isaiah 53:3, which we've all read, because whenever really we hear the story of the gospel, we always hear this verse, but it just means so much more to me as your mom right now, as you're reading it, when it says, refers to Jesus as a man of sorrows acquainted yes. with grief.
Yeah.
None of us want to put that on the God we love and serve. We want him to be joy, peace, strength, power.
Yep.
But he's actually writing through Isaiah in his word that Jesus is a man of sorrows acquainted with grief. Mm, so, of course, he's with you.
Yeah.
And he's carrying your grief with you and your sorrow. He himself is sorrowing
yeah.
over the way Birdie's story has now been hijacked yeah. by a terrible disease.
Yeah. yeah. No, that's so true. And I think there's a lot of freedom in that. And mm-hmm. I think what I mm-hmm. experienced in that time and what I had to learn was that God was not afraid of my honesty. Mm-hmm. I might have been afraid of my honesty
yeah.
because of false theology or, you know, that, oh, you just can't say those shocking things to God. And then you read the book of Psalms
yes.
and you read what David said to God. And then you say, wait, David like totally messed up with Bathsheba. He was super honest with God and said, God, why have you forsaken me? All of yes. those things. And what does God call him? Yes. A man after my own heart.
Yes.
And I felt like this invitation of the Lord of just saying, like, just be honest. It's yes. yeah, you can yeah. say this is horrible.
Yeah.
You can. And I found that the more I was honest, the more free I felt. Mm-hmm. And I am like the master of suppressing my emotions, which I didn't fully realize. But yeah. I think I subconsciously tell myself, well, they're not negative, like sitting in that everything's terrible is not helpful to me. So let's just move on to I process by doing. What do I need to do? Yes. So purging the house and organizing. But I just remember even one night, we were about 4 months into her treatment, and I was going to bed and I just started crying and like had trouble breathing, felt like it was a panic attack, which I'd yeah. never had before. And it was just at the thought of facing another day mm-hmm. of giving her another shot, being mm-hmm. alone another day in the house. And mm-hmm. And I feel like true grieving began that night
yeah.
of just, I had no strength left on my own. I had mm-hmm. no energy or mm-hmm. grit to push through anymore. Mm-hmm. And I just felt God comfort me. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that began a process of just being more honest mm-hmm. and then experiencing, it was like the honest, hard, deep, dark emotions brought a lightness and a freedom. Mm-hmm. And I began to realize the power of being honest with God and being honest with yourself about how hard things are. Mm-hmm. And that is actually what brings you freedom. Whereas I think before I was afraid that I would get stuck there. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to just be this negative person. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to get stuck in life is terrible all the time or mm-hmm. I was so afraid of being that person, whoever that person is, mm-hmm. I don't know.
And or worst case scenarios, because you didn't really know what would happen with
Bertie. Yeah. But nor, and I think this is what I'd love us to just spend some time talking about, because I think I also had this false idea that grief was linear and that I would grieve and that then I would be able to just embrace whatever happened and whoever she was and whatever her life looked like. Mm-hmm. And I remember just sitting in a therapy waiting room and they're an amazing place to sit because you see some of the most joyful moms you've ever seen delighting in their kids. Mm-hmm. It's just kids who are so far worse off than Bertie.
I remember you telling me that in that pediatric developmental waiting room, which is where nobody with a child wants to be, means your child is not developing the way the way you want them to. Mm-hmm. You said that you saw some of the most beautiful women you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. And it was the delight on their face. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at them, and so much of that is true. Like they're a sight to behold to just watch the way they interact with their kids. But I remember you said something to me, not in the moment of that, but maybe a year after. You said, I wonder if you idealized that they must just be so joyful all the time because they've fully accepted their child, and they make and maybe idealize that it's easier for them than it actually is. Mm-hmm. And I think I did. I think I saw that and I said, okay, here's where I'm at. I'm sad. This is dark. There's a lot of unknowns. Mm-hmm. And here's these women who are living the worst case scenario with their child in a wheelchair who's never going to talk to them. And they're so joyful. Mm-hmm. So I want to get to there.
Right.
So let's just get this part over with because that's what comes next. Uh-huh. Acceptance and joy. That's and I felt guilty. I felt like this is, I don't want to just be sad for myself. This is about Bertie. This is not about me. This is, you know, so many things I wrestled with feeling like I shouldn't be so sad. I shouldn't be sad still. I should be over that now. And I just think what I've learned in the in this process, this messy process of grief, is that grief is anything but linear. And it takes a lot of time. And there's certain things we never stop grieving. And I would say I'm not in the stage of crushing grief with Bertie anymore. And we are now 4 years into this. And she is in so many ways the best case scenario. She is very high functioning. She talks, she eats, she runs around. She's hilarious. But her life is not easy. And our life is not easy caring for and helping her. And it's a daily struggle. And I think what I've been so thankful to be able to experience is that God is with us in every stage of grief. And that we do slowly start to move to different stages, or it feels lighter, or I'm able to rejoice in who she is now versus just grieve the life she's doesn't get to have. But there are moments when I still feel really sad or when something is very bothersome to her that wouldn't bother a normal kid. I have to take a moment and let myself be sad about that. And then I'm able to move on and thank God for all the things she can do. And, you know, I've heard it once said, and I just think it's so true, is that you have to grieve what was in order to love what is.
Gosh, and that makes so much sense.
I think how many of us haven't grieved what was?
We try and skip that part and get to just, you know, and we Christianize it. We over-spiritualize it as if God himself is saying that that is what we want, you know, that he wants from us. Whereas in Elizabeth, you just read me this passage in Ecclesiastes. You read me the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think it's worth you reading. And for us, as we're listening in the context of grieving, whether it's grieving something awful like your child having epileptic seizures that are hurting her brain, or you're grieving what would be every mother's nightmare when a son or a daughter goes off in some sort of rebellion or addiction or serious mental illness, I mean, I don't know about you, Elizabeth, but I would rather have any bad thing happen to me. I'd rather die than see a child go off.
Yeah.
Where we can't. If that's your grief, especially listen. And even if you're grieving just simply a loss of freedom in this period of time where we are very restricted in what we're able to do with the COVID-19 restrictions, just listen up.
Yeah, this is Ecclesiastes 3, which I think we've all heard before, but I just recently read it and heard it with new ears and new meaning. So it's, to everything there is a season, a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones again, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away. And it just keeps going on and on. Mm-hmm. But what stood out to me was this equal balance. It's an equal balance of loss and gain, of mourning and joy, of, you know, gathering and letting go, like, and it's equal. And I think we live in a time and a culture and a church, as our own human beings, we want the balance to be different. We want as much as possible to be joyful, to be increase of income, to be gathering into barns, to be spring and summer. And we want a lot less of the hard and the mourning and the weeping. And yet this passage so beautifully lays that there's equal time for both. And when we embrace the times that are hard, it doesn't mean we're saying, you know, bygones to the fruitful, joyful times. It just means this is the time and the season that we're in, and that we're always going to be going back and forth between both. And that, if you're anything like me who likes things linear, that's exhausting.
Yes.
And it's a dance that has to be learned, I think.
So what would you say to the person who loves somebody who's going through a time of real grieving and mourning and being messy about it? Yeah. Because aren't there times where you're kind of annoyed with the whole world?
Yeah.
In the midst of it? You know, why would somebody complain about, you know, whatever?
Yep.
It's raining too much in springtime in Portland when your daughter is, you know, hanging on by a thread. What are some things we can say, and what are some things that we should avoid saying at all costs?
Yeah. Man, I think the best thing you can possibly do is just sit with them. And don't try to fix it.
Yeah.
Don't try to help them see the positive. Okay. And it doesn't mean that that's not true, or that they are maybe not acknowledging the positive, but it's not helpful when you're really sad. You just need someone to say, I'm so sorry. And if that's all you can offer them, if you can't actually do anything to help them, then just say that's fine. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
How can I pray for you?
Yeah.
And not just in the moment when they've just gotten the diagnosis or they're in the hospital, but I think that we need to learn the art of sitting with people in the long term of grief. And I think that's hard and exhausting in its own right, especially if we haven't faced our own grief. It's hard to sit with somebody in the helplessness and in the sadness. But I think, you know, like you said in the last episode, that suffering is really lonely. And it's true. And I think some of that is unavoidable. And I think a lot of it is avoidable if we could just sit with people and send. And it is simple as this. Send a text. I'm thinking about you today. I'm just heavy for you. I'm so sorry for what you're going through.
Yeah.
And doing that frequently to know that that person is seen and heard and that somebody is remembering that they're still sitting in the grief or in the darkness.
And that maybe you're even grieving with them.
Yes.
You know, one thing I've heard people say, and to me it's just one of the most beautiful things, is when people say, you know, I know that God is grieving with you.
Yes.
And that's just amazing. He's not trying to rush you through the grief.
No.
He's grieving with you.
Yeah.
What about the very, it seems like a new kind of a new phrase that I hear a whole lot from Christians now who are in the Word, and because of brain science and some of this, there is the word, think positive thoughts.
Yeah.
Don't think negative thoughts.
Yeah.
They're toxic, especially if you're pregnant.
What
woman doesn't think a few negative thoughts in the middle of pregnancy?
Exactly.
But what do you think about this idea of toxic, of positive thoughts?
Well, I recently have a lot to think about this. No, I've been thinking about this because, honestly, when people say that, it kind of bothers me. Mm-hmm. And I was just contemplating the other day, why does that bother me? Like, we see it everywhere. It's, you know, all over Instagram. It's, and you know, there's all these amazing, fascinating neuroscience books coming out, and, which are helpful. I think there's a piece of that that is really helpful. But I just started contemplating, like, why is that so bothersome to me? Because it seems such a, like, it's a, it's, the power's not in thinking positive thoughts. No. The power's in the Lord. And I think what I realized is, well, nowhere in Scripture does God say, think positive thoughts.
No.
And I started thinking about that, and okay, well, what does God say? And, you know, it, there's a lot about taking every thought captive as unto Christ Jesus. And dwelling, Mom, you have your Bible open. I was going to grab mine, but Philippians 4:8, you read it. What does it say?
Okay, I'll read it right here. And now, dear brothers and sisters, let me say one more thing as I close this letter. Fix your thoughts on what is true.
Yeah.
And honorable and right. Think about things that are pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, I wonder if we could change the conversation of think positive thoughts to fix your heart, fix your mind, think on what is true, meaning what is true about God.
And what is lovely in this.
Exactly, because whether Birdie is going through what she's going through or all of my kids are perfectly healthy and developing fine, the same is true about God in both of those scenarios. And whether we're in the thick, crushing part of grief or we're able to rejoice in things we never thought we could rejoice in, that we serve the same God and the same things are true of God in both of those scenarios. And so I think it's a well-meaning thing to say. It's a cultural thing to say. It sometimes just rolls off of our tongue of just, I'm sending positive thoughts. We're going to think positive. I want to stay positive. Which some of that can be good, but I think a lot of times it glosses over all the, it for those that are grieving, when it's said to somebody who's there grieving, it unintentionally says, stop your negative feelings and you need to just be happy.
That's right.
And that's not what anybody's intending
it's
on
kind
saying.
Kind of dismissive.
Yes, it feels
almost
dismissive.
Feels a little bit like you're saying, I don't want to hear about your grieving because I can't handle it.
Yes, which is not anybody's intention.
Never. Yes.
But, and I don't want to make people fearful of, oh, I got to be so careful what I say around a grieving person. You know, when we're struggling, we're going to hear what we're going to hear. But I just think the more we can learn to lament with people, and I think we see that Jesus did that so well and wasn't afraid of people's weeping and wailing and lament. And he met people right there. And, you know, I think if there's anything I've learned in grieving Birdie is that grief can't be rushed. And I wanted to rush it. It wasn't even that I felt like others wanted me to rush it. I didn't want to keep
so
feeling
so uncomfortable.
Yes, so uncomfortable. And I couldn't really see an end. And I think that the greatest gift that her journey has given me is recognizing that you can equally hold both joy and sorrow at the same time. And before, I think I would have said, you're either sorrowful or you're joyful. It's either okay or it's not. And recognizing that the joy seen on those moms' faces in that waiting room didn't mean that they didn't carry immense sorrow in their heart.
Yes.
But that, just like Ecclesiastes, that it's a both and, that because we have Jesus, we can walk through sorrow with an incredible hope.
Yeah.
But the hope doesn't negate the sorrow, or the sorrow negate the hope.
Yes.
And so I think that it's just so important that we are able to acknowledge both of those things. Because if, you know, if we turn off the grieving, then we're not actually living and experiencing all of the relationships and emotions that are right in front of us.
And one of the things I saw as a mom who knows her daughter well, and you were living across the street at the time, so we really saw each other a lot, is I did see you have to turn off your emotions entirely until you open the floodgates, until you allow that grieving. Because I remember the day that you say came the next day over and said how much you'd cried, how long that night your face was still red and puffy. And and it seemed to me that it became a breakthrough for you to begin to be to be able to strip off some of the stoicism that you'd put in place because you were afraid what would happen once you started. And you still had huge responsibilities of caring for her and caring for your family and caring for your husband as he grieved very differently than you. I watched you and Brooke handle your grief in neither right, neither wrong, both honest, but you grieved so very differently that that created a loneliness, I think, for both of you a little bit too. Do you want to describe just real briefly how Brooke's approach to the suffering and his response was a little different than yours?
Yeah. You know, I think God was really gracious at looking at it now. Brooke grieved right up front. And would cry every time he came to the hospital and just was grieved really honestly, but all up front. And I think I'm just so thankful that we didn't grieve at the same time because we are very different. And I think it would have been a lot messier had we both been having to process all of that emotion and unknown at the same time. And I think his grief was shorter and has been interspersed all along, but he got to the just rejoicing in her a lot faster than I did. And I think by God's grace, he was able to be strong and really gracious with me as I grieved and gave me a lot of space. I think what surprised both of us is that, you know, in high stress modes, we both tend to give each other less space and expect more of each other to be like each other, you know? And I feel like it really allowed us to give each other more space. To just say, okay, well, she needs to organize everything right now. And that's what grief is looking like to her. And he needs to go just watch a movie or go do something fun. Because that's all this grieving has been really heavy and he needs a break from it, you know? And not to resent each other for that. And I will not say we did it perfectly. This is not to idealize. I think it clearly was just God's grace of being able to do that at different times. But I think it did open us up to realizing that all of us, no matter what our personality is, we all process and grieve differently. And it's not bad. It's just different. And it doesn't mean that Brooke wasn't grieving because it looked different than mine, or that I wasn't because it took me longer to actually get to the grieving. And then my grieving took longer. You know?
But I also saw the difference in that you, part of the situation, you wanted to know every single piece of negative possibility. And that just so reminds me of myself, because information is control. And I would rather go to what is the very worst thing that could happen. Deal with that. At least theoretically think I've dealt with that. And then move forward. Whereas that was the antithesis of Brooke. What is the most positive outcome and concentrate on that.
So true. And it still is our dynamic. Still we just had a Zoom call with a pediatric neuropsychologist who was amazing. And she's going to get to see him in July and have a big assessment. But, you know, I latched on to a couple things he said that were like confirming of some things we've been seeing of like some OCD tendencies and things like that. And I was like, great. Okay. He's going to be able to give us information about this. So that's my thought as we're walking away of like, okay, facts and diagnosis. And Brooke's thought was, he had said something really positive about her of just, just that she's doing so well, that she's so high functioning. And so that was his takeaway of, I'm so good to hear that she's doing so well. And she's, you know, and both are true. And I think we've just had to learn to listen to each other.
Yeah.
Because I've had to learn that I have to vocalize when I'm feeling sad, mm-hmm. when I'm feeling triggered. Mm-hmm. And I've had to learn to recognize, I feel triggered right now. This mm-hmm. is triggering an old memory. Mm-hmm. I need to be sad for an hour or two, and then mm-hmm. I'm going to be able to move on, uh-huh. you know?
Yeah.
And he's been so faithful to sit with me in that of just, okay, you're sad about this and I don't need to fix it.
Yeah.
Because I know you're going to be sad and God's going to meet you in it. And then you're going to be, you're going to move on, because that's kind of the pattern we're in with it now.
And I think sometimes, don't we idealize things in marriage where we think that we should be there for each other.
Yeah.
And what we mean by that is not that we're just there and loyal to each other. What we mean is perfectly able to bear each other's burdens. Yes. And that is just not how real marriage works. Often we become our own worst enemies. And there were times in this grieving that it was easier for you to talk to me.
Yeah.
Than it was for you to talk to Brooke. And that mm-hmm. was actually healthy.
Yes.
That you needed to just spout with nobody putting an end time. I don't want to hear any more of this.
Uh-huh.
And Brooke couldn't bear that and still be the energetic leader that he is.
And that's okay. And that doesn't mean we can't talk to each other about it. Or I remember we've had to do and still do sometimes, but really routine overnight EEGs in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And so it'd be Birdie, as you know, a one-year-old hooked up to all these wires that she's not allowed to touch. I mean, it's just miserable.
Awful.
And not like, I mean, she was fine and okay, but it's just a hard 24 hours. And we would do the first couple together, and we would just fight the whole time. It was just, I'd get hyper-controlling, and he just, like, hated that. And we just responded to it differently because it was triggering all sorts of memories of a tragic 8-day hospital stay that we never expected, and, you know, all these things. So we learned after doing a couple of them, you know what? It would be a lot better if Brooke stayed home with the big kids, took them out for ice cream and stayed super present to them. And if you, Mom, came to the hospital with me and just helped me manage all the cords. And so we did that. And that's not, that doesn't mean that.
That's not a failure of your relationship. That's just being smart, being wise.
Totally.
And having understanding and sympathy and compassion on each other.
Yeah. And then Brooke was able to fully be present to me of knowing I was in a very triggering situation.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. So he was able to be there for me and my triggers versus both of us be triggering at the same time, which was not great.
Which is never good.
Yeah. But again, I think that just shows you it's messy. There isn't a book that you follow and a track that you follow. And
the right way to do it.
Yeah. You know,
an end date.
We live in Bend, and the spring is just kind of a fun, wild time weather-wise. Bend is beautiful. But because there's mountains all around I don't even fully understand the science behind it, but the weather just kind of changes drastically. Mm-hmm. You always carry a jacket with you somewhere because it can be, you know, 75 in the spring, especially. It's 75 one day and it feels like summer. And the next day it's 55 and a giant windstorm. Mm-hmm. And it's all beautiful, but it's kind of violent and volatile, I would say. Mm-hmm. And you never know what you're going to get from day to day in the spring. And I think that is the best picture I can describe of what grief, I think, is often like, is that we want it to be a clear season that's mapped out, that has a beginning and an end and a purpose, and then it's done. Mm-hmm. But I think grief is not like that. It comes one day, it's 75 and sunny, and you're looking forward to summer, and you feel like you've made progress. And another day, it's the wind comes at you quickly and
worse
blinds.
Than ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it might just be a day. Mm-hmm. And then it might be 75 again.
Yeah.
And to embrace those days as they come and say, this is not forever, but I'm feeling this in this moment today. And I'm going to acknowledge it, and I'm going to let God meet me in it. Mm-hmm. And I think, what a beautiful thing to be able to share with our kids, not in an emotionally volatile way of, I'm just so sad right now, but in a, you know, Mom just took Birdie to the doctor and it was really hard and I'm just feeling kind of sad today. But then equally saying, man, Birdie couldn't ride that scooter a year ago and look at her now. Look at that. And someday maybe she'll be able to ride a bike.
Yeah.
Or you know, there's days where I see other four-year-olds riding a two-wheeling pedal bike and she can't pedal a trike, you know? And in that moment, it's okay to be sad.
Yes.
But I can also have hope that someday she's going to get there.
You know what I've seen with you too, as a mom, you have an ability to allow your children to be sad that eluded me when you kids were little. I didn't know that was okay to just be sad. You don't try and cheer them up. You don't try and tell them 10 reasons to be happy, that they should be grateful. You just let them be sad and experience their sadness. I think, wow, what? That's such an emotionally healthy, we now know, way of just doing life. It's okay when Scarlett is just sad because somebody can't come over to play.
Yeah.
That's don't try and fix it.
Oh, man.
Just let her have a little taste of grieving so that when what we would call real grief or tragic grief or grief for the long haul comes along, she's had a little practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say that doesn't come naturally to me. That is very much done on purpose. And I don't really know how to do it fully. But I think it was alarming to me to see how much I shut down emotions in myself.
Yeah.
And how easy that is as a parent for me to shut down those emotions in my kids, because I see the practical, well, you don't need to cry. You're going to see your friends tomorrow or you saw them yesterday. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't help Scarlett navigate her emotions. I mean, sometimes I need to point out the positive to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's been something that honestly this whole thing has taught us, and that Brooke has been done a great job in leading us through, of just because he's had to learn. He's a 7 on the Enneagram, so negative feelings of any kind are not what he would choose to sit in, but he's had to learn to sit in them. And I can feel the negative emotion, but then I want to do something to fix it right away. And I think we both had to just learn and are learning how to just sit with our kids in their negative emotions. Yeah. And then over time, we can start to pull them out of it. And it doesn't mean you don't ever...
We don't want drama queens here.
No, but
some
say,
drama
I'm so sorry.
Is part of life.
Yeah, I'm so sorry the plans just changed. I get why that's a bummer.
Yeah.
And leave it at that for a minute.
Yeah.
Which is so hard for me to do.
I know.
But our hope, the goal is that that's going to help them understand their own feelings and emotions and know what to do with them.
Yeah.
So jury's still out. They're still young. We'll see if it works.
Yes. Yes.
But.
Well, thank you for being so honest with us here about your journey of learning to grieve.
Yeah.
And allowing yourself to lament and letting it be nonlinear, as you keep saying. It doesn't follow the list and isn't over when you want it to be. In reality, you may be grieving some of Brudy's limitations for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And the rest of her life. So, and that's okay, because God is with you in it. And there is coming, I would just remind everybody in Revelations, there is coming a someday.
Yes.
And really, ultimately, it's that someday. Not this life on earth. Some things aren't going to get fixed. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to hear. We don't know how far Birdie will come in her development. But there is a someday when I will hear perfectly.
Yeah.
When Birdie will have no limitations.
Mm-hmm.
She won't be overwhelmed by sensory stimulation.
Yeah.
When our friend who has a Down syndrome child will be free to express herself and will know what Rachel really was thinking all those years. And those who've lost a child either through death and tragedy or who've lost a child because of severed relationship, that is all going to be healed someday.
Yes.
When Jesus comes back entirely triumphant over all these awful things that are part of real life and all these hurts and all these sorrows. And that ultimately is what we hang on to hope.
Oh, so true, Mom. And I think any of you listening who are just in a time of maybe even coming aware that what you're feeling is grief, and it doesn't have to be some big tragedy or sickness. Oftentimes it's the small things that we so desperately need to grieve. This time right now, COVID-19, we're all experiencing grief and loss, whether it's been incredibly tragic and the loss of a job or the loss of a loved one, or whether it's, the grieving of just being stuck at home and isolated, that is something to grieve. And I just want to invite all of you listening to that, the stirring in you or something feeling off is usually where it starts, to ask God, what is that that I'm feeling? And invite him into it, because he's so faithful to uncover, graciously uncover, and help us navigate what it is we're actually feeling.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.